It's Thursday, July 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan won't drop as planned. President Obama hits the campaign trail for his possible successor.
The Zika virus is contained in regions of the world, and what public policy experts are worried about is the catalyzing the spread of the virus.
Because of the Rio Olympics, is the world at risk from the Zika virus? Also ahead, the technology behind the visuals at the movies. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama has announced plans to maintain about 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan into next year. The administration had initially planned to reduce the number of U.S. troops from the current 9,800 to around 5,500 by the end of 2016. But Mr. Obama says the security situation in Afghanistan remains precarious, and so he's leaving more troops than originally planned through the end of his administration.
We've been able to end our major ground war there and bring 90% of our troops back home. But even as we work for peace, we have to deal with the realities of the world as it is. And we can't forget what's at stake in Afghanistan. This is where Al-Qaeda is trying to regroup. This is where ISIL continues to try to expand its presence. If these terrorists succeed in regaining areas and camps where they can train and plot, they will attempt more attacks against us. We cannot allow that to happen. I will not allow that to happen.
President Obama said leaving more troops in Afghanistan when he leaves office will also give the next U.S. president more flexibility to make decisions about how to best move forward on the long-running conflict. International Edition host Ira Melman discusses the president's decision with VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas.
It wasn't an easy one. As you know, he ran, even as a senator, running for the White House, promising to end these wars. And here he is, really in the final months of his presidency, saying, well, I was going to draw down the number of troops to 5,500, but we're going to go and leave them at 8,400. That's because it's a mess. The security situation is worsening. The Taliban is surging back. We have Islamic State trying to really set a foothold there, finding it so unstable that it is a good place for, as you know, Islamic State to move to, try to set up another, you know, home base. And then you have Al-Qaeda elements that are still there and still continuing to cause problems, and that's a key priority for America. It really is a very difficult situation, and again, he's going to go to NATO later this week and try to get commitment from coalition partners, and he just has a few months left in office. So it's not good.
As you heard, he has asked the Taliban to come to the negotiating table. What's the latest status on that?
Well, really, no real progress has been made on that. There is also tremendous dissatisfaction with the new leadership in some of the latest polls among Afghanis and their new, you know, president and their chief executive. And so no real reform or major progress has been made in that area. And so this is just another one of the elements that the next president will have to deal with. It's security situation. It's a lack of political reform. It is still a notoriously corrupt government. You have refugees problems there. You have infrastructure problems that continue. The economy is just in a shambles. That's why there's a lot of criticism here. And the president has said, I continue to tweak my approach toward Afghanistan based on what my team, military and intelligence team, tells me, but it's you can't argue that it's a resounding success, although the administration does say progress has been made.
Mary Alice Salinas at the White House. We turn now to our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22, and she has more on the controversy surrounding a meme Donald Trump shared on Twitter. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. It's been a few days since Donald Trump tweeted the meme targeting his Democratic rival, Hillary Clinton. But the controversy is still much alive today.
Oh, yes. As a refresher, the meme showed a picture of the presumptive Democratic nominee with the words, "The most corrupt candidate ever," and in a six-pointed red star.
Right, and the star was a point of contention. The meme originates from a white supremacist website, and many people believed it to be a Star of David and therefore anti-Semitic. And to do damage control, his family got involved, and who is better for this role than his son-in-law? He is the husband of Trump's beloved daughter, Ivanka Trump. He is Jewish, and he's the owner of the newspaper New York Observer. So really, it's the perfect trifecta. Ivanka Trump converted to Judaism when she married him.
Well, tell us more about him and how he got involved.
Well, his name is Jared Kushner, and he wrote a piece titled, an opinion piece rather, titled "The Donald Trump I Know." His media company, The Observer, tweeted a link to the article and is currently the pinned tweet on its Twitter page, at Observer. Basically, he wrote, "Donald Trump is not anti-Semitic and he's not a racist. I wouldn't expect his own son-in-law to say he is otherwise, right?"
Mm-hmm.
But one of his employees, Observer writer Dana Schwartz, had criticized Kushner for supporting Trump. Trump himself hasn't tweeted about the controversy per se, but he did send out several tweets about Clinton's email investigation on Wednesday. That's all for me today, Jim.
Well, thanks for the great wrap-up, G. You may tweet us your comments and questions to at @VOA_IE. That's our stream on Twitter for International Edition. And you'll find myself and G on Twitter as well, at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour: for the first time, U.S. sanctions Kim Jong-un for human rights abuses. U.S. expands duty-free access for travel goods made in Cambodia. Islamic State says Dhaka cafe slaughter just a glimpse of what's coming. Muslims worldwide come to grips with bloody Ramadan. China paper warns U.S. of price to pay in South China Sea. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app if you happen to have a smartphone. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. President Barack Obama hit the campaign trail with Democratic Party presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton Tuesday, just hours after the Federal Bureau of Investigation cleared her of criminal charges in the way that she handled classified material on a private email server while she was Secretary of State. Mr. Obama said he was prepared to hand the baton to her as the first female U.S. president. But her likely Republican rival, Donald Trump, denounced the FBI decision, saying her actions in sending classified email on an unsecured private server disqualifies her from high office. FBI Director James Comey said that while the year-long investigation of the case did not turn up clear evidence that Clinton or her aides intended to violate the law, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. Jeffrey Skelling, associate editor of the Sabato Crystal Ball website at the University of Virginia Center for Politics, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the FBI decision is a mixed blessing for Clinton.
This threat to Clinton, the greatest existential threat to her candidacy, has been removed in the sense that there's now nothing holding her back from being the Democratic nominee. You know, there's no expectation that the Justice Department will pursue charges against her. But on the other hand, there's no question that FBI Director James Comey's remarks were pretty good material for Republicans to use to attack her during the general election campaign. I mean, I would be stunned to see the extremely careless line clip being played over and over and over again between now and November. It was good for Clinton in the sense that it sort of moved to the next phase of the election cycle, got beyond this potential problem for her. But at the same time, it's not going anywhere. It's going to remain an election issue.
To the average voter and to observers inside and outside the country, is there a sense that, as Donald Trump would say, the system is rigged for those who have political connections as opposed to those who don't?
I think it's difficult to say for sure what public attitudes are. On the one hand, there's a great deal of cynicism among Americans and other people around the world and Western democracies and the like, but decreasing faith in institutions. So this probably plays into that to some extent, institutions also including the leaders of said institutions. But at the same time, I also think there's something of scandal fatigue for voters because this has been in the news for so long. To some degree, it may end up being something like the Benghazi issue from just a political perspective, in that it becomes a good tool for rallying one side, but has less of an effect on the overall electorate, and Democrats will dug in on the defensive and won't be, you know, particularly interested in hearing about it. And so I do think scandal fatigue damages it as a potential issue for Republicans to use.
Jeffrey Skelling says the FBI report undermines Clinton's argument she's the most qualified of the major party candidates to be president. But he also says the issue of mishandling of classified material has become so politicized that it'll lessen its impact in the minds of average voters. We are just 29 days out from the Rio Olympics opening ceremony, and organizers are facing considerable skepticism about their ability to handle various challenges. And those challenges are the focus of this week's hashtag VOA TV show, and host Michael Lippins right here in the studio.
Hi, Jim.
Michael, why is there so much skepticism about the Games?
Well, I'll tell you, there has been a lot of online commentary from people who say that Brazil's outbreak of the mosquito-borne Zika virus is so serious that the Games should be postponed or even moved away from Rio. Other people have pointed to recent doping cases involving Russian and Kenyan track and field athletes and saying that's a sign that Olympic events will not be clean of cheaters. We discussed those issues with retired U.S. women's soccer player Brianna Scurry. She's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, and with international sports attorney David Larkin. I asked Larkin what he thought of the Rio Games CEO Sid Levy telling VOA last week that his staff is dealing with Zika, but not as a top priority.
Well, I think it's a bit foolhardy. I mean, you know, I'm a biochemist, and from a public policy, public health standpoint, there really is a real threat here. The Zika virus is not something that poses an insignificant threat. We're talking about real threats to your infants and development. The effects of Zika are catastrophic on a developing embryo. And so the thing that Mr. Levy really has put aside is the idea that we're not just talking about the athletes, we're also talking about everybody who's traveling to Rio, and we're talking about millions of people. Exactly. And so what are the ethics of increasing the risk? Because the Zika virus is contained in regions of the world, and what public policy experts are worried about is the catalyzing the spread of the virus. If that happens, which certainly seems to be a risk of bringing millions of people to Rio at this time of year, then what are the ethics and what responsibility should the IOC and others bear in catalyzing the and transmission rates of this virus to populations and poor people who may not even have an opportunity, who aren't so rich, who don't have the opportunities for health care across the world? This is something that I think he's really neglected to address.
Well, David, as you may know, the World Health Organization has agreed with the IOC that they see the Zika threat as being quite low during Brazil's winter, which is what's coming up. And the organizers also say, you know, the threat is greater in places like Florida. So should people really be concerned about going there?
Absolutely, because the thing you have to understand is that, you know, the WHO, unfortunately, is as politicized as other organizations. If you look at the experts, we now are up to 150 public health experts who've signed onto the idea that the IOC has not thought this through, that this is a real threat, that this is a real concern, and the people at the IOC have failed to really think through the public health implications of this.
Well, among the implications, Brianna, are some top athletes saying they won't go to Rio, and I'm thinking specifically of golfers like Rory McIlroy and Jason Day. They've cited Zika as a reason for pulling out. What kind of a message do you think that sends about the games that are coming up?
I think those two gentlemen have every reason and every right to decide not to go. They obviously have circumstances in their lives where they want to be sure about the safety of themselves, their wives, and their maybe future families.
Because there are family planning implications, aren't
there? Absolutely. That's the thing. That's the most important part. And so, of course, I completely support those athletes for making that decision. And for athletes that decide to go, they'll take the precautions that they've been told to do, and we'll go from there.
But, you know, Brianna, there's been some commentary online, some cynicism about the reasons for these really top professional sports stars not going, especially the golfers, people saying, you know, the Olympics are really not that important to them. They have other tournaments that are more important, and maybe Zika is kind of a pretext for them just to skip something that they could miss. What do you think about that?
I take those two golfers, their opinions on to why they're not going at face value. I believe that Zika is the reason they're not going, but in terms of the Olympics being important, it is something that has been going on for, you know, centuries, and many athletes devote their lives to participating in it. And so I would say that to people who think that the Olympics are no longer important, they don't really understand all the work and the time that goes into preparing. And I understand how all the other athletes, the 11,000 that are going, have decided to participate regardless.
And that was Brianna Scurry. And just on a personal note, it was really exciting for me to get to have a chance to talk to Brianna Scurry for the second time on Hashtag. I'm a big U.S. soccer fan, as you know, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And to meet Brianna Scurry, she was the goalkeeper of the U.S. team that won the Women's World Cup in 1999. I remember watching that final, and that was really cool. Another special treat we had in this week's show, we spoke to U.S. swimming star Michael Phelps's first swimming coach, Kathy Bennett. Phelps, as our listeners may know, will be in Rio for his fifth consecutive Olympics, and he will try to add to his 22 Olympic medals that make him the most successful Olympian of all time. Now check that out. Watch the full show on voanews.com/#VOA, or you can go to my Facebook profile, Michael.Lippin. Jim?
Well, talk about 6 degrees of separation. I covered that 1999 Women's World Cup with Brianna Scurry. And
you
also,
were there.
Yeah, I was actually there and talked to her throughout the tournament and saw Michael Phelps win 8 of his gold medals at the Beijing Olympics.
Okay, that's cooler than me.
So that was, no, it's not cooler than you, but it's fun that we have the opportunity to meet some of these big stars and check out the Hashtag VOA program. Michael, you're doing a wonderful job there.
Thanks so much, Jim.
You can visit voanews.com for more on these stories. Also, follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And you can like us as well on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at voanews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. This year's summer blockbuster film season is in full swing, and whether it's Tim Burton's Alice Through the Looking Glass, X-Men Apocalypse, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Warcraft, or the latest in the Star Trek series, it's the visual effects that play a huge role in making imaginary lands seem real. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about a school in Hollywood that is training the next generation of visual effects artists.
Whatever you plan to do, do it now!
You've seen their work in Iron Man 3, The Hobbit, and The Hunger Games. Overwhelming visual images that transport you to a land you've never seen, to Middle Earth, to Thor's home planet, or into the jungle with Tarzan. But though their work might be overwhelming, the visual artists training at Noman School in Hollywood don't make a lot of noise. Most of their work is on computers, whether it's for a film, a video game, or a television show. They create spectacular creatures, they multiply armies for epic battles, and they give actors and directors the tools they need to create entire universes. Alex Alvarez is the founder and CEO of Noman. He founded the school in 1997 to give prospective students the tools they need to get work in the film and gaming industries.
That's always been the focus, was really to create a professional training facility that's very career-oriented. And so for people that have a background or a creative background, whether it's in the arts, sculpture, drawing, painting, photography, graphic design, motion graphics, architecture, all of those types of traditional backgrounds can lead very well into careers in the entertainment industry.
Brett Shields is one of the students working on a game design. He says that Noman offers something you can't find in other schools.
But nowhere else in the country will you find such a gathering of professionals, both educators and students learning the process of making games, designing games, texturing, modeling, all across the board. So the spirit of collaboration here is just astounding.
You might find students in sculpture class working on clay models of fantastic creatures or characters for a movie like Avatar. They might be working on illustration, drawing a fantasy figure based on a real model. Or they might be at their keyboards, learning motion theory and how to make computer-generated figures appear real. Tom May is one of those students. He says that Noman does more than just train artists. It connects them with filmmakers and game designers who are waiting to put them to work.
It's got a ton of connections to the local network of artists, and I love it for that reason, that it's got a lot of workshops, demos, artist talks, and you get access to this wealth of incredible producers.
Good. I guess I just sort of wanted it to look like a semi-real room.
Dominic Patton is the senior editor of Deadline.com. He says the demand for visual artists, like those being trained at Noman, is only going to increase as movies become more fantastic, more overwhelming to the senses.
The big blockbusters, the superhero films, the sci-fi films, the films that put the lights on in Hollywood, they are fueled by the Visual Effects Society. So with over 2,000 visual effects artists around the world, over 20 countries, they are the ones who are fundamentally giving us the look and in many ways defining what modern Hollywood is.
So whether it's in Independence Day, Resurgence, Star Trek Beyond, Assassin's Creed, or Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, the work of visual effects artists will continue to transport audiences to places they've never been, to tell stories they could never have imagined. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And we all thank you for listening to International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Terrorists attacked an Afghan police convoy outside the capital, Kabul, June 30th, killing at least 30 people and wounding 50 others. Two bombs hit a convoy of buses carrying police academy graduates from a ceremony on the city's western outskirts. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the murders. The bombing follows the June 19th suicide attack on a minibus in Kabul, which killed at least 14 Nepali security guards. The cadets were returning to Kabul from a training center in Wardak province and were about to go on leave. The attacks were immediately condemned by President Ashraf Ghani, who called the incident a crime against humanity. While Muslims are busy praying during this holy month of Ramadan, the Taliban keep committing reprehensible crimes by killing innocent people and spreading fear and terror, he said. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued a statement condemning the horrific multi-part attack on Afghan national police and civilians in Kabul. The first attack targeted new police cadets, with a second attack purposefully targeting the brave people who rushed to help the victims, the statement noted, adding this cruel and complete disregard for human life during the holy month of Ramadan is abhorrent. Our thoughts and prayers are with all of those killed and injured, as well as with the victims' families, colleagues, and friends. We will continue to stand with our Afghan partners and friends as they work to bring peace and security to Afghanistan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.